Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the October 25th, 2019 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here to talk about Medicare today, Medicare fraud, Medicare in general, and with me, because he knows all about Medicare, is Bob Bronstein. Bob is a fellow benefits counselor and as well a speaker for NITP. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Bob. How are you? Sorry I couldn't be up there, but glad to be here anyway.
Yeah, Bob is coming to you from Florida. So,
Yes,
he's well positioned. We're not so bad today. Anyway, we're joined with two folks from ARP, am I right with that? And Teresa Brownson, did I do that right?
Yes, Teresa Brownson.
I practiced before we went on the air. And Darnetta Bascom, and senior Medicare Patrol Project, coordinators for ARP, and ARP's legal counsel for the elderly. So if we throw out the first question, Medicare fraud sounds pretty serious, but what is Medicare fraud such that what would somebody be, why would somebody want to do that?
Well, thank you, Bob, for having us, and thank you for that great question. But before we begin, may I give a little background of the Senior Medicare Patrol Program?
Please do.
Thank you. The Senior Medicare Patrol Program, commonly known as Senior Medicare Patrol SMP, helps Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries prevent, detect, and report healthcare fraud. We not only protect older persons, we also preserve the integrity of the Medicare and Medicaid programs. What's unique about the SMP here in the District of Columbia is that we are part of Legal Counsel for the Elderly, which provides free legal and social services to low-income persons 60 and older. Now, as you mentioned, Medicare is complicated. Medicare fraud occurs when a person or a company knowingly tricks Medicare. They do this intentionally to receive inappropriate payments from the Medicare program.
I can't imagine that.
I know.
But this is the hub. I'd imagine this is countrywide, maybe even offshore.
Correct.
That people are doing this.
Correct.
What's a common occurrence where somebody would try to take advantage of Medicare? And I guess it would be, I see these scooters on the TV, and I thought I read something about that people were getting the scooters and then reselling them.
Yes, and that happens a lot. They see the ads on the television for durable medical equipment, and they call and order it. But what Medicare requires for someone that's going to use the Medicare services is that they go to their doctor to receive these services and not take durable medical equipment off television ads. And what they do in the television ad, they ask the Medicare beneficiary for their Medicare number, then they'll bill Medicare inappropriately. But it's required that if Medicare is going to be billed for durable medical equipment, which, such as wheelchairs and scooters and knee brace and back braces, your doctor give a prescription for those things.
Okay, Bob, in your travels throughout your federal career, as well as a seminar presenter and knower of all things federal benefit-wise, do you ever get any questions in class or come across somebody that contacted you after class and say, you know, I really need this, but I don't qualify for this?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, and just to, for our guests to set up the federal universe, most of the folks that we deal with who are federally retired, who are involved in Medicare, have chosen to enroll. You probably know this already, but those who have the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, when they become Medicare eligible, mm-hmm. actually have the option to enroll and don't have to. Some of them just simply keep their Federal Employees Health Benefits plans, but others will enroll in Part A and certainly Part B. And then with Part B, they're given a qualifying life event to switch their health insurance coverage to a less expensive plan, but one that works more, basically works better coordinating with Medicare. In other words, it covers everything that Medicare Part B doesn't cover. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any copays anymore, and so on. So they're given that opportunity as a qualifying life event to switch to another plan if they enroll in Part B. The other thing they're allowed to do, and they can even suspend their federal employees' health benefits coverage, is get involved in a Part C arrangement, which is, of course, the new Medicare, which is Medicare Advantage. And if they eventually don't like that arrangement, they're allowed to come back to the Federal Employees Health Benefits Network. So the, I guess the issues that our folks run into, and I've talked to several, is that sometimes they're being told by people who call them on the phone or send them information that what you have in one of these arrangements, Medicare A and B, and either a sort of supplemental plan through Federal Employees Health Benefits or Part C, may not be enough, and that you need to get this additional supplemental plan. And some of these folks are actually getting phone calls. They're getting mail that's been unsolicited. Mm-hmm. And they're asking me, you know, is this okay? Is it okay for a provider of, say, Medicare supplemental services to be simply contacting people without that person requesting the information?
Well, that's a great question, and that's what we educate beneficiaries about marketing. Medicare providers are not allowed to unsolicit a beneficiary. They can they have to actually have a direct contact with the person to call about a new plan. That person already have to have contact with the provider in order for them to contact them. So unsolicited marketing is definitely a violation.
Yeah, I saw something, you know, along those lines. I was reading an article, and it said that there were some changes, I guess, made for this year, which would allow emails, et cetera, to come from these providers, provided that they include something called an opt-out. And I'm not sure what that means. Do you have any more information on that?
No, I'm not familiar
if
with
you're
that,
a civilian,
but I can definitely get back with you on that question, opt-out.
Okay.
I know that now that when it comes to durable medical equipment, they don't have to go through the ones that they had to go through before. So they're actually mm-hmm. not allowing, they don't have to go through a provider that's already been approved through Medicare when it comes to durable medical equipment. That might be what they mean by the opt-out, but I'm not sure. I would have to get back to you on that question.
Okay, and before I turn it back to Bob, I had one. You raised another very important issue, which I really want to hear stressed. You know, your Medicare number, your Social Security number. I've been told that you really need to protect those cards, that information, just as much as you would a credit card. I mean, that's something I know people should do to protect themselves. Never give out that number and so on. I'm just curious, in your experience, what else can a person do?
Well,
to protect themselves against Medicare fraud.
Yes, that is true. A person should always treat their Medicare card as they would their credit card, because recently Medicare beneficiaries have received new Medicare cards with a variation of numbers and letters. That only protects their Social Security number. It does not prevent health care fraud. And they also can only share their Medicare card with physicians, people in health care, and also just rely on the doctors for medical advice and prescriptions and not advice of others of medical services. And never sign a blank medical or insurance form. You know, always read and make sure you understand the content before you signed it. And you can also request a copy of a form or a document you signed for, you know, with your own records, for your own records.
Great advice.
And another thing I would like to interject is that if for some reason a person is on Medicare and Medicaid and they sign a document unknowingly understanding it, they can get out of that particular situation because they didn't truly understand it. So they have what they call appeals. So Medicare does have appeals where you can get out of situations. All is not lost if you sign something and didn't understand it.
What's the difference between Medicare fraud versus Medicare abuse?
The difference between Medicare fraud and abuse, it boils down to the person's intent. Both abuse and fraud have the same effect, They consume valuable resources from Medicare Trust Fund, which would otherwise be used to provide care for Medicare beneficiaries. It is the intent that creates the fraudulent situation.
Wow. Spoken like an attorney?
Well, I do work with the legal counsel for the elderly.
Somehow we picked up on that. Very good. Right. Great answer.
Right in a nutshell. Let me ask a question that's related along these lines, because every now and again, I've talked to people who say that they get providers, Medicare supplement providers, who are marketing themselves as actually representatives of Medicare. It's always been my understanding that they work with, for private health insurers. So, number one, are they Medicare representatives? And if not, what should someone do if they're approached that way?
Right. The providers are not, they do not work for Medicare. The marketing does not, they do not work for Medicare. And if you run across a situation like that, they should be reported. They are to provide by certain high standards, and they are not to be soliciting individuals and coming off as a Medicare specialist. They are private. In private business, they're for profit, and they're out to get as many customers as possible. So they should be reported.
I get solicitations, if you will, in the mail because of my age, and it says you should buy this Medigap policy. And then I'll get something from somebody else. And, after the first couple, you go, I wonder if there's anything to this other than a hustle.
Mm-hmm.
So why would somebody want a Medigap, and why would somebody not want a Medigap?
A Medigap policy is to fill in the costs and benefits where your other Medicare or your Part B plan or your Part D plan may not cover, or your Medicare Advantage plan may not cover. So a Medigap will fill in the gaps, exactly what it fills in the gaps that your other insurance may not cover.
So Bob and Claes, do you get questions on that?
I do. I continually remind people, particularly who aren't military retirees and who must enroll in Part A and Part B, that Medicare, first of all, enrollment, when the time comes, is a choice. It's often a good choice, particularly if you have health issues and you're looking for great wraparound coverage, peace of mind, and so on. But I continue to remind them that they should not drop their federal employees' health insurance coverage.
Right.
They have the option of changing to less expensive coverage, which will, serve as the Medigap policy, for lack of a better term. It's the supplemental coverage. And that if they did want to, let me just use a funny term, road test a Medicare C arrangement, that the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program actually allows them to suspend the FEHB enrollment in lieu of a Medicare C arrangement, which, of course, requires you to buy Part B. You pay for Part C, which essentially fills the gap, but through a network, perhaps a more limited network of PPOs, HMOs, recognized health insurance companies, and they have those situations. The question that I typically get is from people who read the mail when they turn 65 years of age and aren't, I guess, skilled in understanding when Medicare is the primary provider.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who still have health insurance through the job, and Medicare never pays first if you have job-based health insurance. So they sign up for Medicare Part B, and they're usually perplexed when they try to get a copay or a deductible or coinsurance paid by Part B as a secondary payer, and they're told by the Medicare B folks that, number one, we don't pay as secondary payers. We don't pick up those costs. When we're primary, we cover 80% of your costs.
Mm-hmm.
Your health insurance waives the rest. That's the particular confusion that people have. When am I Medicare eligible? And the other thing, too, and this goes back to what I was saying before, it seems like the whole world knows when you're turning 65 years of age because of all these mailing lists that have gone out. You start getting barraged with tons of mail, and I'm sure our guests have heard this. And it's very, very confusing, and some of them are very inviting, and others are saying, oh, beware of the 10% penalty for every year that passes that you don't enroll, and they get scared, and they enroll in things that they don't need. Some of the marketing that comes to them is just general mail. I mean, I wouldn't call it obtrusive or pressuring, But several have told me that they're actually getting phone calls from folks when they turn 65 marketing products. And that goes to, the fraudulent practices that you're talking about. They shouldn't be making these cold calls to people who haven't asked for the information. So that's kind of our federal universe. Most of them are going to wind up being in Part B, Part A, Part B, with some other federal employees' health insurance coverage that's less expensive, but that fills the gap. For those who are in our federal audience who are military retired, they generally, in order to keep their TRICARE coverage, have to enroll in A and B, and then TRICARE becomes the gap-filling plan. So the chances of finding too many fraudulent practices with respect to Medigap or Medicare supplement plans, not so much. I think where they're going to wind up having issues, and this goes back to, again, what our guests have stated, you need to really look at your statements, keep a good record of when you went to the doctor, what they provided to you in the way of services, what your bills were, and then when you get that explanation or statement of benefits from whether it's Medicare or from your health care provider, make sure that those line up.
Okay, let's line up with a break. The good folks at WAPA sponsored the show. I believe our listeners should really listen to this because it can provide benefits beyond what we're talking about with Medicare.
If you're a civilian federal employee looking for group term life insurance, there's a clear choice: WAPA. Underwritten by New York Life Insurance Company, WAPA not only offers affordable rates, but over the past 22 years has refunded members over $96 million in premiums. WAPA partners with NITP, the national leader in federal pre-retirement training, to provide world-class resources to their members. WAPA, in partnership with NITP, is offering its members valuable information to plan for their future, including monthly webinars on topics such as tax strategies and retirement, managing retirement income, and more. Protect the ones you love by becoming a WAPA member today. Visit waepa.org to compare rates with Fegley and see how much you could save. And unlike Fegley, you can keep your WAPA policy if you leave the government. WAPA, providing over 44,000 civilian federal employees affordable life insurance and more.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today, March 25th, 2019. We're talking about Medicare, and we're talking with Teresa Brownson. Why can't I say that? Brownson, as well as Darnetta Bascom, along with Bob Braunstein. The first two ladies, they're with ARP, correct?
We're actually with Legal Counsel for the Elderly, and AARP is we are an affiliate of AARP, but we are with Legal Counsel for the Elderly. Legal Counsel for the Elderly has its own 501c program, and we are only here in the District of Columbia.
Okay. And Bob Braunstein, Federal Benefits Whiz Kid. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Good to be back.
All righty. So where did we drop off? I get so wrapped around the actual listening, I forget where we dropped off. I don't know that
The federal universe. Let me just ask a question that I know Teresa and Darnetta, forgive me if I mispronounced that. Can you talk to us a little bit about, I guess, the legal statutes? I mean, what are the specific laws that govern Medicare fraud? Where is this getting its power?
Okay, thank you. In 1995, the U.S. Administration on Aging, which used to be called AOA, became a partner in the government-led effort to fight fraud, error, and abuse in Medicare and Medicaid services. And they announced this and called it the Operation Restore Trust. That means there was so much distrust lost in Medicare and Medicaid that they wanted to restore the trust in the Medicare and Medicaid systems. So what they did was they got with the Conference on Aging at the White House in 1995. They announced a partnership between the Department of Health and Human Services, the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Services, the Office of Inspector General, and again, the Administration on Aging, to work as a team to coordinate anti-fraud healthcare efforts at the local, state, and federal level.
That's a daunting task, no?
Yes. Yeah, and it still is today. We are all partners in trying to fight Medicare fraud, waste, and abuse in healthcare.
There was a we have a prolific email person. I never say male or female, a person, so okay. Nobody could recognize. And here's a question. And the question is, one of the reasons that agencies such as ARP are looking at combating fraud is high cost of drugs. Wouldn't it be prudent to have competitive pricing in Medicare as they do in the military? And just gut feel. I mean, we're not doing anything political here, but is that ever been discussed that might be done?
Well, as I mentioned, we work for legal counsel for the elderly, mm-hmm. and we are not to give positions on political issues. That would be something better addressed by someone above our pay grade.
Very political answer. Very good.
I use that answer a lot myself.
So Bob and I are good at we know what we're talking about, but sometimes you go, I don't know enough to really answer that.
And that's where we are.
And I'm not saying you're like that. Please. All righty. So the other question would be, I remember when I turned whatever the age it was for the Medigap policies and the like. Is there any reason to ever buy a Medigap policy?
Well, I think Bob answered that pretty good from the federal level, yeah. about Medigap, you know, so he can reiterate that. But most people, if you have Medicare and Medicaid, they can't even sell you a Medigap policy.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're in a Medicare C arrangement, Bob, what it boils down to, that's kind of not even, it's the new Medicare as opposed to the original Medicare. And when you're in that kind of a situation, essentially Medicare manages everything, including the gap filling, which is done through, I guess, they're recognized healthcare providers in the forms of health maintenance organizations and preferred provider organizations that cover everything that Medicare Part B doesn't. Part B covers, 80% of Medicare assignment. Part A, of course, covers in-hospital visits, 3 days, being treated, et cetera. It's great wraparound coverage. And at that point in time, you really can't, they can't sell you Medigap. That's incorrect. It's if you go back to the original Medicare, which is enrolling in A and B and then being out in the marketplace and looking for supplemental coverage, a good company, that's when you might be, in the market to enroll in a supplemental plan. They both serve the same purpose. They both fill the gap and cover what Medicare doesn't, but a Part C arrangement and a supplemental arrangement are radically different from that standpoint. People do have issues with that. And again, just to go back to the difference in the federal universe for those who are retired and Medicare eligible, Medicare is a choice. One of the things all of our brochures will tell folks when they become Medicare eligible is that look at it carefully. It's a choice. The Medicare B premium could be a lot more than $135 a month per person because it's means tested. It's based on adjusted gross income with a few other things added into it. Mm-hmm. It's not just your income. It's the income for yourself and if you're married for your spouse. And you may be the only one becoming eligible for Medicare because your spouse is, say, 5 or 6 years younger than you. Your premium is going to be based on all of your income. I mean all of it. And it could push it as high as $428 a month. So the real question people have to ask themselves is, can I manage what my cost sharing is with my health plan? Is that not so onerous at this point in time? And save a lot of money by not being involved in Part B Medicare, which means that I don't have to worry about Medigap or anything else because my health insurance is going to pay for it all. And I could do that for quite a few years and then maybe, pick up a few penalties. And then if it comes more cost-effective, more risk-effective for me to enroll in Part B, I'll have some penalties, but I will have saved a lot of money. My income may go down. My premium may go down. These are the kinds of things that are somewhat unique to the federal environment because the majority of the private sector health plans that I know about generally discontinue your coverage at 65 and make you enroll in Medicare. And if they even offer supplemental coverage, it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. But many of them, just like the military. The military says you're turning 65, you don't have health insurance through other work, So you're now going to be under Medicare for your primary coverage, which was designed for your risk pool, for lack of a better term. And we will continue to cover what Medicare doesn't, but we're going to become TRICARE for Life. And what's terrific for the military folks is that TRICARE for Life is free. So it's that arrangement that we have in the federal government, which is somewhat unique. We have many, many federal retirees who, because they can still manage the cost sharing with their plan, the copays, the deductibles, the coinsurance, simply do not enroll in Part B Medicare. They enroll in Part A, but after all, that's free once you no longer are working, and as long as you had it for at least 10 years, paid for it for at least 10 years, it will cover the catastrophic hospitalization costs and so on and so forth, the core costs associated with that. But many don't enroll in Part B because the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program doesn't mandate it. They're trying to entice people to enroll. They would like people to enroll, and they're offering more Medicare-friendly arrangements with, I guess what you'd call their, you can't call them supplemental plans, but some of them only really work well with Medicare, something called Aetna Direct. There's another plan called GEHA. They work exceptionally well when Medicare is the primary payer. If you have Part B, they cover just virtually everything else. You're almost out of pocket for nothing. But a person needs to be in some serious health issues to opt for that arrangement. And those who go into the initial stages of Medicare eligibility who don't have much going on are pleased to find that they don't have to enroll in Medicare.
All right. I have a question. I got two questions listening to all of you all. The first one is, unknowingly, I request reimbursement from Medicare for something I thought, but where do I commit fraud? In other words, if I'm just dizzy or I just filled this out and I didn't really know, but I thought it was covered, it would probably hit a tripwire within Medicare. What's this person trying to do? Mm-hmm. Is there relief for somebody that just, oh, my, I thought that was covered?
Mm-hmm. So we're assuming that you are a provider and you're already enrolled in the Medicare system as a provider.
Mm-hmm.
And you unknowingly bill Medicare for services, or you bill them for the wrong services.
Got it.
That is abuse.
Okay.
And that will probably require re-education. Medicare, when they find that someone unknowingly billed Medicare for services that were erroneous in some way or the other, they will have someone come out and maybe re-educate you.
So it's kind of like going to traffic court. And I didn't know I was speeding. And they go, you need to be re-educated.
Well, yeah, but they make you pay the ticket too, right?
Yeah. Okay. And then the second one, Bob mentioned premiums are affected by somebody's income going over a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's generally a higher level than what one might normally have, but we oftentimes deal with people at different parts of their career or they're downsizing. And the classic example is they sell a house and they have a profit of more than X.
Mm.
But they only did it so that they could afford the lower price. But as I remember, I tried to challenge it, and I was robustly told, go seek something else because you're not going to get away with anything here. And I'm not getting away with it. It was just somebody's house that they had been in for 20 years and went up in value, but then it caused the Medicare premium to go up for a year, and then it came back down.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no getting around it.
Mm.
But why I bring this up for the listeners, if they're doing things like that, sometimes people will sell things, not necessarily houses, or they'll try to shore up their retirement kitty by unloading some assets, and they were doing it for the right reason, but it triggers this for a year, and then it goes back down when it gets back down to the more normal income. Isn't that the way it works, Bob?
I think so. Yeah, it's usually based on tax returns of 2 years ago. And as your income goes up or down, the Medicare B premium will go up or down with it. And, you know, here's a question for you, Bob, and you can educate all of us. I understand that the Medicare B premium is not just based on adjusted gross income, but it's called modified adjusted gross income. You're the CPA. Maybe you can educate all of us. What is that?
It's affectionately called MAGIC, Modified M, Adjusted G, Gross Income. And what it is it says you report X dollars on your return. We all file tax returns the same way, you know, everybody online and whatnot. We earn certain earned income, might be a salary, might be a small business, and we might have some interest income, maybe got a little mutual fund and the like, and that creates something called gross income. Now, the law has changed such that there's not a lot of adjustments to it, but there were ways under the old law, new law too, if somebody has an IRA and they could deduct it, then that reduces it. But that's not what they're talking about here. They're talking about somebody's income that went up for whatever reason. They might have inherited something, sold it, and had to pay a tax on the gain. So it's modifying what's ever on your tax return. It sounds kind of jazzy, doesn't it? It's magic income. Well, it's magically going to cost you money if it goes up too high. So when planning things like that, you can't plan your life around taxes. That might sound strange coming from a tax accountant, but you can't. But just be aware that if it's sizable, then you might reconsider not selling it for less money. That'd be crazy. But maybe not doing it together with something else that year. Again, we're talking about here in Bob's and my universe, it's a little bit more people pre-retirement and post-retirement. And they do things that aren't necessarily what they're going to do each year. They might take a chunk of money out of their thrift savings plan mm-hmm. for a special event. Well, that's income. Mm-hmm. Did that make sense, Bob?
It does, sort of. But you leave me in the netherworld of taxation, just like I leave you in the netherworld of benefits. It's a complex issue. Yep. Getting back to something that we were talking about, you're talking about getting speeding tickets and everything else. Let me ask our guests the whole issue with regard to transportation to doctor's visits. There's a lot of conflicting information out there that kind of transportation is something that should be covered or is covered by Medicare. And I've heard that, yeah, it is, but there are certain caveats. Mm-hmm. And maybe, can I ask for a little bit more information on our Medicare fraud and abuse experts on this very, very important point?
Well, when it comes to Medicare paying for transportation, and a good reference for that, and everyone guesses that on Medicare, is that Medicare and You Handbook. And it updates it every year, and you can get it online or they'll mail it to you. But always refer to that Medicare and You Handbook. The 2019 Medicare and Handbook talks about transportation and when Medicare would pay for it. And one of it is if you need certain type of services while you're being transported, for instance. If I have to have somebody with my blood or my oxygen or, you know, something like that needs to go with me, you know, I they would pay for it under those type of circumstances. But just going
sounds like
back
an ambulance, maybe.
Right, like ambulatory care, yes. But you just can't call an ambulance because you feel like you're not feeling well and they're going to pay for it under those circumstances.
Or even if you just need transportation to the doctor,
right.
You can't call for those reasons either. But like Teresa said, it has to be a unique situation where you cannot be transported any other way but by ambulance, and then they will pay for it.
Okay, what if somebody...
Yeah, I have some light. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Bob.
If somebody does it unbeknowing, and or they couldn't get a family member, are there reasonable cause tests that said, you know, this is not covered, but in this case, because I'm elderly but there was no one around to take me someplace? I don't know. I live in a different world than most people. Everything is not black and white.
Right.
It's taxes. It's gray.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, this would be a gray one.
Right. Extenuating circumstances, yeah. And there are some caveats and things that they allow for under certain circumstances, yes.
Okay. Andrew was telling us...
I had enlightened self-interest on this one. Sorry to interrupt, Bob. Just to give you a little bit of a background, my parents are currently in assisted living, and God bless them both. My dad's going to be 100 this year, and my mother will be 95 next month, which is pretty amazing.
Yes,
so I have some longevity. But as you can imagine, they're using a variety of services to get back and forth because I can't always take them. I'm still working. I'm on the road. And I guess they call them home health care providers who offer ambulatory services.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my dad probably has, I don't know how many ologists he has, but he has to visit them somewhat frequently at his advanced age. And, you know, these are folks who get him into the car, load his wheelchair, get him there, and literally help him do things that he absolutely could not do on his own. It's like literally transporting assistance with activities of daily living. And if I'm to understand what I've just heard, these kinds of visits, because the caregivers aren't what you call skilled medical professionals, these types of assisted visits would not be something that would qualify for Medicare reimbursement.
So you're saying that the home health aid is there with him during that time, helping him get into the services, and you're asking that, are they, should they be paid while they're doing that? Is that what you're asking?
Well, I know that, no, they are paid. The question is, are the expenses to my folks and people in similar situations who have to use these services to get back and forth to doctors, are any of those considered coverable, for lack of a better term, by Medicare?
Okay, so it depends. If they're in an assisted living facility, that's that's part of their assisted living costs. So the assisted living place is providing the transportation for them.
Actually, it isn't. They're using an external,
external
health care cost. Right.
Oh, now that I
and they have to do this because the assisted living place will offer transportation, but you see, they don't stay with the people because they have to run back and forth and transport a variety of folks. My folks need, I guess what you'd call custodial support with activities of daily living, transferring, doing things even when they're on site to help them. And I guess that's a little bit unique. It's close to what you were talking about, but it's not exactly, you know, a doctor or a medical professional providing them with medical assistance on the way.
So that's more of an aide, the home health care aide person.
Yeah.
But you're asking about the transportation that takes them back and forth. Is that Medicare?
Yes. Exactly. The home care aides or the home care service, this particular, you know, the name doesn't matter, but X service, it provides in-home care and will take you and be with you to help you in a doctor's visit. So because they're coming with you and staying with you and helping you get in and out of the doctor's office and things of that nature, it's a little confusing to me. Is this something that Medicare deems as not coverable?
I will have to check, but I believe it is because of that your parents can't do it for themselves.
And the facility does not provide the transportation.
Right.
So they have to seek outside resources. So I would.
Yeah, the facility actually does provide transportation, but they don't provide that hands-on service, and they don't stay with them.
The home health care aide.
So they need to reach out for a provider who does. And just to give you an idea, this cost them in the neighborhood of about $6,000 last year because of all of the visits my mom and dad have to make to their various providers.
And you had to pay out of pocket?
Yes.
Oh, we have to look that up.
That would be great. Yeah. If you can find a positive answer, if you can find that would be the greatest thing in the world for them.
What state are they in? Florida.
We're in the Medicare capital of the world. Florida, where there are more old people in the entire universe. Yes.
Okay.
So that would be wonderful if we could get some information on that.
Okay. Will do.
Very good. Now, we need to take a break. Not that this wasn't extremely interesting, but those people at NITP want to have a break. So let's listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're in the final minutes of the show, and we're talking about Medicare, fraud, abuse with the people that know. Teresa Bronson, Brownson?
Brownson.
Why do I mess it?
Just say the color, like the color brown.
Okay, Brownson. I'll remember for next time. And Darnetta Bascom. And Bob Bronstein. And Bob is an NITP speaker, retired Fed, and knows about benefits. Don't you, Bob? Bob says yes.
A little bit, every now and again.
Okay. If I was to look at this as a global view, not necessarily for the people that are in the position to know whether they qualify for this or not, but for people approaching that age or for caregivers approaching that age, where can somebody learn not the way out stuff, but how does somebody become more familiar with what Medicare is going to reimburse and what is not? Because then they might take action to provide that personally.
Well, each state has what they call a state health insurance counseling program, and they're called traditionally called SHIPs. And a person can talk to their SHIP counselor and just get advice on, you know, what's compare costs. They let them, that individual know all the services that are offered in that state, who the providers are, what the providers provide, what drug they'll cover. All these things are covered at the state health insurance counseling program, which is a free program in every state.
All right, I'm going to ask all three of you. What if, how does somebody, they know that the coverage may or may not be there, but where do they go to get the answer that it's covered under? Is there a place to go?
Well, they can always call Medicare.
Okay.
Yeah, they can call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE, and the number also would be 1-800-633-4227 to get accurate information and assistance.
And they can call us. We have a direct line to Medicare, and we can have them on the line and help answer their question for them. Or when they can't ask the right question or don't know how to phrase the question, sometimes we can act on their behalf to phrase the question in a way that can get an answer for the person that's asking the question.
And how does somebody get your number?
And we are here at 202-434-2099. That's a line that comes directly to our desk. 202-434-2099.
Okay, now can people from outside the district call?
Yes, any place in the United States can call that number, and we'll pick up and answer. And if there's a question that's state-specific, then we can give them the number to the senior Medicare patrol in their state.
Wow.
And we're also located
You mentioned...
I'm sorry. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we're also located, the Senior Medicare Patrol is in all 50 states, including the District of Columbia, Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and Guam.
Wow.
Great. Where do I get a hold of that? All important.
And then I imagine they also have state issues. So if they're in all the different states as well as the territories.
Yes.
I'd imagine every territory or state has got some different wrinkle than the other one.
Exactly.
How does anybody know that?
Is that handbook you mentioned?
Yes.
How about that handbook? How do I get a hold of one of those? And is there a cost associated with that?
No, it's free. You can call the 1-800-MEDICARE number that Darnetta mentioned. That's 1-800-633-4227. Or you can go online and request one, and they can send it to you. You can actually read it online if you want to go to medicare.gov.
Great.
It's updated every year with the new laws and new benefits and things like that. And that also has in the back of it state-specific information about the providers and the Part D plans and all those things.
All righty. Bob, I'm going to ask the group in general. What questions have you had that you thought, gee, why doesn't somebody know the answer to that? In other words, does this qualify or not? And it's pretty clear that it doesn't. And then do the reverse. Bob probably deals, deals mostly with federal employees, so their health care coverage isn't different, but it's probably a notch or two better than what it is outside. So, Bob, what kind of questions did you ever get where you go, I think they should know that, but of course you're not going to say that?
Well, the primary, and again, to use the same word, it's knowing when Medicare would be the primary payer. And this is where people continue to have light bulbs turned on because, you know, many people are working longer. They're 65 plus, yet they're still getting health insurance through the job. And they think that simply turning 65 makes them Medicare eligible. Medicare eligible is a term of art, means if you had it, Medicare would pay first. And it never pays first if you still have health insurance through active employment, not through OPM as a retiree. That's the big one that people ask. And then the second one that they ask me, and they're usually kind of surprised at the answer, is, well, don't I have to enroll in Medicare? And the answer is no, you don't. I would recommend certainly enrolling in Part A, but take a look at Part B from the standpoint of how healthy you are, recognizing that if you delay for every 12 months you do, there would be some penalties. But in the meantime, you can save money on the cost of the, you know, individual Medicare B premiums, which, is, like we were talking about before, is based on modified adjusted gross income. It could be very, very high. Those are the real, those are the sticking points. Those are the things that I continue to run into and continue to help people correct. And in many cases, they've gone ahead and enrolled in Part B long ahead of schedule and have been getting no benefit from it at all.
Interesting. As you're talking, I'm thinking people taking money out of a retirement account for a savings plan, IRA, that would generate taxable income. And if they took a little bit more out than usual to fix the house or go on that vacation they never took, all of a sudden they pay a higher premium for a year. Actually, I remember that too well because I had a couple clients like that. And it wasn't a huge amount. It was just enough to push them over into the next level. But we're talking about
the same thing happened to me.
I can't believe that.
Exactly.
No.
Well, it did. I sold a house and got, you know, I had some funds that I was using down in Florida because equities dropped so low that I had to pull some money out of funds. The next thing you know, it pushed me into an insane Medicare Part B pay bracket. So I dropped out for the year. Recognizing I was going to pick up some penalties, but I'm going to save a lot of money in the meantime. Let me raise something we haven't talked about, but I'm sure people run into this. When you get older, you start getting these exotic conditions, and sometimes they're difficult to diagnose, and you're subjected to lots and lots of different tests, whether it's biopsies, CAT scans, PET scans. I mean, and continually repeating these things, I mean, can't be that good for your health. I read about some providers running all kinds of extra tests on folks to the point where, you know, they're like glowing in the dark, which is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there are certainly physical consequences, but I mean, does this in any way lend itself to fraud when you're getting tested and you don't really understand what the rationale is? Some people call it the medical vortex. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they can't figure out what's wrong with me, but they keep testing me. You know, clearly, I mean, how would your office handle that?
Well, fraud could be billing for medically unnecessary tests, and so
got it.
And with electronic records now, if you had one, it can be whatever doctor you go to, they should be able to look at that and not require another one. So there are such things as unnecessary tests, and that can be considered fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some very responsible physicians who basically say, well, we don't want to do this to you anymore because we don't want you taking that radioactive trace element because it's just, you know, since you're stable, we're just going to do blood tests. And that's probably what people want to hear. But yet, on the other hand, sometimes it just keeps going and going and going with no answer. And I get questions occasionally about that and what can they do. And it sounds to me like that might be something they want to report.
And you can always, I mean, you should always report, even if you just suspect. It may not be fraud, it could be fraud, but that's not what we determine. We just report it, and that's the beneficiary. They should just report it. And they have some people that are specialized in determining what fraud and abuse is, and it's not us. It's someone with a, you know, of a higher grade level that look at all the circumstances that surround it, and they make the determination of what's fraud and abuse. We just report suspected fraud and abuse.
Got it.
I bet you keep pretty busy.
Oh, yes, we do. And I did want to answer the question about when you say some of the questions that come in that we find that's come all the time. And that's the difference when people think they have Part Medicare Part A, they think they have Part B, C, and D. They think they have all three, and they don't understand the differences between Medicare Advantage, which is Part C, and Medicare Part A and B and D. And I heard Bob say that some he opt out of Part B when he was – some federal workers might opt out of Part B while they're still working and suffer a penalty. But if you're still working and have qualified Medicare outpatient health care, then you don't suffer a penalty as long as you're – have a qualified penalty. So I just want to clarify that.
No, yeah, it's called a special enrollment period, and people who are 65 or older with still have health insurance through the job do not have to enroll until the work-based health insurance ends. Then they have 8 months. That's correct. Yeah, that's the way I tried to characterize that, and if I created any confusion, I apologize.
That's okay.
Okay, we're counting down to 49 seconds. But don't feel any pressure. Final thoughts, comments, ladies?
I just want to add that in order to, you know, continue to report the healthcare fraud, always contact your health provider, call the company that paid the bill, and please do contact your local S&P. And for D.C., you can contact us at 202-434-2099. The number for the D.C. S&P is 202-434-2099.
Very good. Bob? Final.
And if I get a letter from a Medicare supplement provider offering me a free blood pressure kit to sign up for their plan, should I be thinking about reporting them?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to be reported if we talk too much more. So, ladies, thanks for being here. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.